Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are talking about horror literature.
Hello!
Oh, good.
We are Pop and Circumstance, the podcast where we talk about pop culture.
Yeah, which encompasses movies, books, TV,
anime, manga. But today, we are on part three of our Halloween mini-series, and today it's going to be a little bit of a mashup, kind of. We're going to do a mixture of tales, like...
Spooky tales.
Yeah, spooky tales, and just a little brief history of like, horror literature. I won't go into too much depth because there's like a lot, but we'll talk about it and its contributions to pop culture.
Yes,
because it's a big deal. I learned a lot of stuff from from my research. I thought it was pretty cool.
I'm Emily.
I'm Eva.
I'm Victoria.
Yeah,
we're three POC women.
three POC women. I said it wrong the last time. It was redundant. But you get the idea. And we just like to talk about things that make us happy.
Yep.
And this is one of them. And I actually like scary books.
Which is weird. I don't understand. You make no sense.
I just don't like the visuals and I don't like the jump scares. I think that's what keeps me away from...
But why books though? Because books... I think books would be scarier because your mind gets to do whatever it wants. Because it's open to interpretation. Your imagination gets to do whatever it wants.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me trying to trick my own mind into being like not making it as scary as it could be.
Yeah.
In my brain, I kind of dilute it. Although I do read a lot of horror webcomics on Webtoons. I don't know why. Those still creep me out. And sometimes they put like vibrations in the phone.
Yeah.
I'll get into it later, but yeah.
Such a weird...
Whose girlfriend is that?
I was gonna say, who's dating her? Why? Questions.
Should I get into it?
Yeah, right into it.
All right, so we go back to olden times. Literary historian J.A. Coudon, I think that's how you pronounce his name, he defined the horror story. Also, I got all my information from Wikipedia, so... He defined a horror story as, quote, a piece of fiction in prose of variable length, which shocks or even frightens the reader or perhaps induces a feeling of repulsion or loathing. I just thought that was like a really cool definition. That sounds cool. Like loathing, I never thought of that before.
For horror?
Yeah. But I guess it makes a lot of sense. There's been a few horror movies we watch where we just loathe a person, i.e. the boyfriend in
Midsummer,
amongst others.
You ain't wrong.
And kind of the horror genre has been around even before, like, written language was a thing. So it's, like, stuff you told around the campfire, and it all rooted in folklore and religious traditions. So it was more of, like, a spiritual thing, focusing on the unknown, death, the afterlife, life itself, all of these questions that you're just like, what does it all mean? And some of it is scary, obviously, because it's scary stuff.
Yeah.
And then in Japan, I'm going to kind of hop, you know, land masses here. But in Japan, it's pretty much basically the same thing. A lot of their horror stuff is rooted into their beliefs. It's a very mixture of like Buddhist / Hindu / Shinto beliefs of like spirits and like everything has its own life kind of thing. And they can be they kind of popularized the ghost story as we know it today. And it got super popular, and they had classics in like the Edo and the Meiji periods, and their classics were called Kaidan, which were literally translates to like a strange story. So things that made you be like, ooh, that's kind of weird. Then we go into the French. We're gonna go into France, and this kind of blurs into the rest of Europe, but France had a lot of werewolf stories and a lot of vampire stories.
Oh, the French.
Yeah, there's a French. The podcast, And That's Why We Drink, they did like a whole segment about this one really popular French story. I don't remember all the details, but essentially like a werewolf story. And to this day, people are like, is this like true? Because there's like a lot of accounts of this hairy beast like killing a bunch of people and a lot of people going after it? Or was it just this big old fable? Was it just like a regular bear or like a giant dog? Mm-hmm. Or was it a man? Some people think it might have been a serial killer too. So that's kind of where the werewolf thing comes out. This strange entity killing people so savagely. And they're just like, only an animal could do this. And then vampires are also really cool because they originated out of like the fear of illnesses and diseases. And there's a lot of things that had to do with like the dead, where, you know, like that whole bell thing. Have you heard of that? Where they used to connect like a string from the coffin to the top. And if you heard a bell, there was like, like they were just like, oh, someone's in there, then they're still alive. But then a lot of people would say, oh, they're just decomposing and
yeah, because you can still shift while you're dead. Like when you're dead, because they're still
And then there was like an American like folklore. Again, I don't know the details, but essentially went like this: where there was this family, and everyone was saying, oh, they're all someone in this family is a vampire because everyone's getting sick around them. And so they're like the only, and then it ended up being, I think, the dad of the family, who was the last one to live. And they were just like, we should check your family, like their dead bodies. And if any of them are still like gorgeous or whatever, they're vampire. And they're the ones who are like cursing the whole village. And so he's just like, well, this is dumb. But if you guys can get off my back, then fine. And they dug up his whole family. And then I think it was his niece or his daughter. She was the most recent one to die. So obviously, she still looked fresh. Fine. Yeah. And so they're just like, she's a vampire. And so they had to essentially, like, destroy her body.
Oh, my God.
And then he ended up dying of the disease anyways. So that's kind of the weird stuff around those kind of things.
Yeah.
Then we go into the ancient 18th century Gothic horror, which, you know, everyone loves. And it was mostly written by women for women. And it's pretty much just about rich women in a giant mansion dealing with spooky things. It's very romantic, you know, kind of, you know, scandalous a little bit. And then it kind of bleeds into 19th century, and there's this a whole other boom of horror stuff. This is when you get the Grimm brothers, Hansel and Gretel, and like literally everything else that they make. You get Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is essentially like the first horror novel.
Yeah.
Everything else was just kind of short stories.
Yeah.
But she was just like, and it was also like the first like true like monster that was derived from science. It's kind of a weird thing. So there's that. You get Washington Irving's The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Jane C. Luden's The Mummy. So this is where you get your universal monsters.
Yeah.
You know, essentially. Also, The Hunchback of Notre Dame is considered a horror. I would consider it a horror. It's kind of, it's got your monster.
Yeah.
And it kind of follows your usual, you know, old-fashioned monster plot where an ugly thing falls in love with a beautiful woman.
It's like King Kong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, King Kong is, even though it's not a horror, but it's like he's a monster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So essentially, there's that kind of stuff. You also get Edgar Allan Poe. Everyone knows and loves him.
Oh, yes.
I actually love his stuff. And his stuff is stuff I think still kind of is creepy to this day. I remember one time in like elementary school, we listened to this, what is it? What's that? Vincent, what's his name? The famous horror actor.
Vincent Price,
thank you. I think we listened to a thing where Vincent Price was reading The Cask of Amontillado or something like that, and it was great. I remembered like loving it. It was so good. It was so creepy.
When I was in high school, I had to read that one where the main character kills somebody and like puts him under his floor, and then he like hears the beating heart.
I think it's called
one you're talking about.
Yeah, and it like drives him crazy.
Hang on, let me look it up.
There was, in eighth grade is when we read all of the Edgar Allan Poe things. So that's why I was like, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But like, I don't remember what it was called.
I had to read it. I was like alone at home and I was like, I was all
there's
scared.
The movie The Raven with John Cusack.
Yes.
And they put that story in there, too. I don't remember what it was called, though. But it,
Yeah.
The Telltale Heart.
Yeah,
there you go.
I was like, Yeah, I love Edgar Allan Poe. I think he's
really good at doing
creepy.
Yeah,
yeah. Creepy shit. And also, his whole life sucks. So that makes a lot of sense. I could go on the whole his. That's an entire episode of just the life shit of show.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah. Then we get The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I live inside you forever.
Fun fact. David Hasselhoff is a great Broadway performer, and he played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Fantastic. Then you get Oscar Wilde's The Picture of Dorian Gray, and like the old movie from, do you know what year it's from? That one is actually really creepy. That one's like talks about like kind of like it's one of those things where it's like if you're super vain, it's like you're ugly on the inside turns you ugly on the outside.
As essentially. It should.
Yeah. That one's a really cool story. I like it. Then you get H.G. Wells' Invisible Man, and then you get Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is, you know, all these classic things. And so after this, you got a whole bunch of hits, but then it kind of calms down and everything turns into more, you know, periodicals and magazines become super popular now. Everyone's just kind of shooting out short stories. And then ghost stories become really popular again. Phantom of the Opera comes out, and that one again.
I was gonna say Phantom was a book first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually it was actually serialized in a magazine first and put into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I learned. And then it became the Broadway musical, which I love. And then I don't know what's been going on around this time, but serial killers become a really big popular subject in a lot of novels and kind of retellings and inspirations of things, because especially Jack the Ripper, Albert Fish, Ed Gein, so on.
For a second, I thought you were listing fake people until you said Ed Gein, and then I was like, yes, Jack the Ripper is a real person.
Yeah, Jack the Ripper, yeah. And in 1959, Robert Bloch, he was inspired by Ed Gein, obviously, mm-hmm. amongst others, to write Psycho.
And then, I did not know that was a book.
Yeah. We're learning today.
Everybody's going to learn today.
And then Thomas Harris wrote Red Dragon, which introduced Dr. Hannibal Lecter, mm-hmm. Hannibal the Cannibal.
Which is also based off of Ed Gein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, and then in 1988, the sequel to that novel was Silence of the Lambs. So these are pretty far spread out, but serial killers have kind of like risen up to be the new monster for a lot of these books. And then in the 50s, comic books are arising. And because there's like, you know, the Hays Code and everything like that, they have a little more leeway in comic books. So they're just like, oh, let's just make it, you know, violent and sexy and what have you. And but people were also scandalized by this, so they tried to do a lot of censoring around this time. This isn't horror related, but it reminds me of how Wonder Woman started out, where have you seen the movie? What's it called?
Yes.
What's it called?
Professor Marston and the
Wonderful Women, something like that. It's about the creator of Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. and he was in a polyamorous relationship with his Ooh. Two wives.
They're so hot.
Who are so hot. And then also the women, like his two wives were also in love with each other. And so...
What a relationship.
Yeah, and the movie's great. The movie's really interesting. So essentially while he was making Wonder Woman, he made Wonder Woman and the Amazons after his two wives, and they did, all of them were kind of really into BDSM, and so he included a lot of this. That's why you get the lasso. And you
oh
see,
my god, I will never look at Wonder Woman the same.
Yeah, and then so in you know, Wonder Woman, he included a lot of, you know, rope play, essentially, and scandal things. And so around this time, that was what's happening in the comic world. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, you get a whole bunch of other commercial successes like Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, and
those are
the
old
other.
Books.
Yep. I know, right?
Yep. Yep, exactly. Fun fact, The Exorcist, since we're talking about scary tales, The Exorcist is also based on, I think... It's
a real story.
Yeah, it's a real story.
I knew that was a real story.
Mm-hmm. But it was
I
in Italy. Instead
book.
Of here. Mm-hmm. Okay. The book was inspired by the real story, and then the movie was inspired by the book.
Ah, interesting.
That also, that whole thing was actually very interesting. Just it's essentially kind of the same thing that you see in the movie, where this cute, I think actually in real life it was a little boy, mm-hmm. but in the movie you turn into a girl because it's even more shocking. Because when this boy just became really, you know, devious and doing a lot of weird contorting bullshit, demon talk, the usual.
No, thank you.
Oh, and then also, there's also a rise of zombies, zombie things, kind of because you're thinking about, you know, the Cold War and nuclear what have yous. I Am Legend is also based on a book, and that is by Richard Matheson, something like that. And he kind of influenced the entire genre of apocalyptic zombie movies, because that wasn't really a thing, you know, back in the day. And so the rise of Rosemary's Baby and all this other kinds of stuff brings another horror boom, because they're super, super popular. And so all these publishers are like, let's keep going. Let's do all this stuff. And then the main person to come out of this is the one and only Stephen King.
Yeah.
We can't really talk about Western horror without talking about Stephen King. Say what you want about him and his content, but he succeeds.
I was gonna say he did define a genre.
Yeah, yeah, so like modern horror, really. Yeah. So here's just a little brief history of Stephen King. His first professional short story was called The Glass Floor, 1967, and around this time he couldn't find really a job in teaching, because that's what he did at the beginning. Yeah, he was gonna be a teacher, but he couldn't find any jobs, so he just published a lot of short stories to men's magazines.
So kind of like Arlstein for Goosebumps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, pretty much almost exactly that same
story.
And Arlstein is so funny because he started his career in comedy writing. And he did this for almost his entire life until he got super famous, maybe I think in his 50s, 60s. And then he had Goosebumps and everyone was like, we love this. And he was like, great, I don't have to suffer anymore.
I'm old as hell.
Yeah, he's really funny though. I really like Arlstein. And then Stephen King's first major book was Carrie.
Hmm. So it was you wrote Carrie. I did not know that.
Oh, you didn't know
that?
Yeah, Carrie is what made him famous, essentially. Oh. It's his fourth novel, but the very first one that made him really famous. It was made in 1973.
What's his first book? Do you know?
Well, this was the first to be published. I didn't really look at all the other ones.
Carrie is so good. I love the movie.
Yeah, I mean...
The good one.
The 70s. The original one.
Yeah.
But, so it has an interesting start. So it started off as a short story, because that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But then he tossed, like, the first few pages, because he got stuck. Mm-hmm. But his wife fished out the pages from the waste bin, and she was just like, uh-uh. She's like, if you're having trouble, I can help you, because you don't know how to write women, so she's essentially like, I will tell you what women are like. And he was just like, okay.
Bet.
And then the rest is history.
What? See, that's a good relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have no idea what their relationship
no,
is.
No, but
now,
I mean,
but...
like, that's a good duo. Like, yeah. That's how you should do it.
Yeah. If you know your weaknesses as an artist, do you reach for somebody who has that perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm looking at you, major corporation.
Yeah. And then later, after his mother's death, King and his family moved to Boulder, Colorado, and that's where he wrote The Shining.
Yep.
Because it was based off of the Stanley Hotel, I think.
Yep, Stanley Hotel. If you've ever been there, it's creepy as shit.
Yeah. I think the Stanley Hotel used to be a hospital for tuberculosis, I believe.
I was like, I've been there. They've also filmed a lot of comedies there.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Like Dumb and Dumber.
I think, didn't they also shoot, am I thinking of a different one? That one movie is pink and it's really stylized.
The Grand Budapest?
The Grand Budapest, was it filmed there?
I don't think so.
No? It just looks very similar to it.
I see why you would think that, but I don't think it's the Stanley Hotel.
Ah. And then, so The Shining took a while for him to write, because he just...
I was gonna say, it's I'm pretty sure it's his biggest book.
It is, yeah.
It's like, that book is big as a hill.
Yeah, and it took him, I think, 4 years to write it. And I think there was just a lot of stuff going on, and he was in a certain headspace, and...
When you say certain headspace, do you mean
cocaine? Yes. And then so, speaking of cocaine, he did a lot of his stuff for, like, It... was based on his cocaine habits. Yeah. Like, when people were asking him about, why did you come up with the, spoiler alert, but it's been out for years, but she's like, why did you come up with, you know, the kids having an orgy in the sewers?
Yeah.
he was just like, I don't know, I was on coke the whole time. Like, so, you know.
Sometimes, you know, the geniuses of the industry, mm-hmm. they don't really remember what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah. So. And then... he's been writing a whole bunch of stuff, and like since then, like the Tower, but mm-hmm. the Dark Tower stuff, and then yeah. also in the 90s, The Green Mile. I love that movie. I think that movie is so good. Very sad, but I thought that that might be considered horror-ish. It is disturbing in some places, and there's a lot of supernatural stuff, but I would consider that to be more of his like realistic, quote unquote, kind of lifey kind of movies or sorry, books. And then now I think he does a lot of like producing and screenwriting and stuff like that. So that's that. And that's pretty much all I have for modern, I mean, for the history of horror novels and movies and stuff. I know Junji Ito in Japan is super, super popular. I didn't do a lot of research on him because I think, Wizard and the Bruiser podcast has a really great history on Junji Ito himself. So if you guys want to know, you know, about him and his impact on Japan, you guys can go check out that podcast. It's Wizard and the Bruiser, and they do a whole thing on Junji Ito. He's a really cool dude, and apparently him as a person, he's not a creepy dude, and he is not who you would think would like horror. He actually writes horror based on like just events that he experiences in life, and his process of creating his manga is so strange. It's very intensive of what he does. So for Uzumaki, which is coming out on Adult Swim soon, that one is based on spirals a lot, right. And so in order for him to really write his stuff like so well and get into the mindset of the mystery and the kind of like the unsettlingness of spirals, he ate spirally things, he stared at like the drain and water, doing, he just like, he did a lot of stuff. He just like surrounded himself with spirally things.
Staring at, have you ever stared at a window or like stared at a mirror for too long? You start to see weird shit.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, oh man.
Yeah. And a lot of his stuff, it was so funny. There's also, I forgot what this story is called, but he creates a monster. It's essentially like a great white shark with mechanical legs and arms. And it looks spidery. Mm-hmm. And so, and they're just like, how did you think of that? He's just like, oh, what's scary? A shark. What's also scary? A spider. He's like, how scary would it be if a shark could walk on land? And that's it. So they're like, okay, all right.
Okay, no those dogs. So literally what he thought.
It's, that's why, you know, him as a person is so funny, because just he doesn't think of all these scary things. He's just like, huh, wouldn't that be fun?
I love that about like certain like horror icons, because mm-hmm. even like Guillermo del Toro.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh my god, he didn't even talk about him.
I know, we did some major disrespect to the king.
I'm so sorry.
I'm a big nerd. I've gone to Comic-Con, the one in San Diego, and I've, like, watched him talk about Crimson Peak. So it's very stylistic.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily that scary, but it's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful film. And he's very just, like, having the best time of his life. Yeah. Like, he's so not the person you would think loves horror in that sense. Like, he's just like, yeah, no.
He seems just like such a friendly, cute man.
Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, this little thing says that I can't curse. I'm going to try really, really hard. He's like, I'm a Mexican. It's really hard not to curse.
Right, yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I love him. I want him to adopt me.
And also, speaking of, like, things pulling from actual stuff, I heard, like, there's this theory. I think I watched, again, I need to get my sources straight, but there's a YouTube video that talks about how three of his major films are kind of connected. It is it's Pan's Labyrinth, and then there's another one he made before that about a little boy in the war, like the Spanish War. Oh shoot, I forgot what that one's called. And then The Shape of Water. All of them are connected in a certain theme of, I think it was a theme of like motherhood or something like that.
Oh, for sure. Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, Pan's, it's very interesting. I think that one's just like really, I think it has to more do with like family and also a lot of connections to the Spanish War, because that's just something that really interested him. But I love him. He's great.
We could do a whole episode on
him. We could. We could.
I ain't got that, man.
Yeah. And so I guess now is a good segue to go into things based on real life, if you want to.
Yes. Real life things. She actually talked about a lot of them. Eva, how dare you just steal sorry. My stuff? Just kidding.
You can go into more detail. I kind of like blew through that.
Yeah, she really did. But no, a lot of them, a lot of like horror mm-hmm. based on books, like the movies that we see and things like that, are also based on real life stories. Mm-hmm. The Hills Have Eyes is a Wes Craven classic. Is based on a story of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Sonny Bean Cape. Sonny Bean? Is that how you say it? I hope I'm saying
Sonny
that.
Bean?
It's the cave clan of Scotland.
Ah.
It's the legend goes that Sonny Bean and his family robbed and murdered passerbys, and then they ate them.
Fun.
Yeah. But since the clan lived in the 17th century, there's not enough evidence to, like, prove that.
Right.
But, like, it's basically, like, a... almost like a folk tale.
Okay.
I'm also like reading this from an article from the book Riot. We'll put a link to it so you can read it for yourself later. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm going to skip some of them since Eva used it.
If you have more information on it, because again, I only
because you brought up
them.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Because it's based on Ed Gein. Yeah. So is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
That one goes a little bit more in detail about like his actual acts.
Do you want me to talk about the real Ed Gein?
Well, nasty. No, I just think it's funny because, like, he's a real serial killer.
Yeah.
He's mm-hmm. a very real human being.
Yeah.
And he influenced
so much.
So many horror movies.
It's so strange. Ed Gein as a serial killer, his victims are not that much as him actually, like, doing the murdering part.
Mm-hmm.
But what made him so terrifying was, A, his weird personality, because he was kind of a...
He had a mommy issue, too, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't the brightest person. His mom was, like, very abusive, but he became extremely dependent on her. And when she passed away, that kind of, like, triggered him, and he, like, needed her with him. That's why he went after a lot of plus-sized women. This is also who they based Buffalo Bill after. He went after a lot of plus-sized women, really large women, who were already dead, and so he would take their bodies and then make fun stuff out of them.
Yeah.
Very similar, if you guys have seen the second season of American Horror Story, their serial killer does exactly what Ed Gein does.
Yep.
And it's pretty much almost to a T who he is. That's that. I won't go into any details. It's kind of gruesome and nasty.
Yeah, so then she mentioned, obviously, The Silence of the Lambs, even though we said that's not a horror movie. But yes, they take him into consideration as well. Then there's also another film called Deranged Confessions of a Necrophile.
Ew.
That one's very loosely based on him, so...
On Ed?
On Ed.
Okay.
He didn't experience necrophilia,
But they kind of, like,
yeah.
jumped a little bit.
Yeah.
You some know creative liberties.
Yeah.
As they do, they're just like, Ed Gein, that's the perfect serial killer. Let's use him.
He's just a weirdo.
I don't know. It's what they do.
Yeah.
I'm glad that, like, Mindhunter didn't just focus on it.
Oh.
It went like, no, Ed Kemper.
Yeah.
Let's go for a different one.
Yeah.
Different
mommy issues.
Oh, God damn it. Not wrong. There's the movie called Quills. Never watched that.
Heard of it.
This horror movie is based on a true story of the Marquis de Sade.
Mm.
You've heard of Sadism? They've named it after him.
Hmm.
This film takes place when he is in an asylum to which he is confined for his sexual deviance.
Hmm.
The book on which the film is based on are those that he wrote, Justine and 120 Days of Sodom.
500 Days of Summer?
Another
horror thing?
And then the next one is The Town That Dreaded Sundown. Mm. So this is another urban legend that is based on a true story.
I love urban legends, but I also hate them.
So you've heard of a story of a couple who goes parking, and while they're at a make-out lane, and the radio broadcasts an escaped murderer with a hook for a hand.
Oh, I've heard of this. Okay.
That urban legend is based on the 6 unsolved, I don't know how to say this town, Texarkana. Thank you both.
Yeah.
Moonlight murders committed by the Phantom Killer. So that's what this movie is based on.
I feel like he's that guy is your textbook, like, true real life slasher guy, because he went after couples. It's so interesting. Also very scary, and that's why I will never park at night in the middle of nowhere. That's asking for trouble, really. Victoria, we're never making out in the dark car in the middle of nowhere.
Why would you do that in the first place?
I don't know. Some people are into it.
I'm scared of the dark.
The Strangers.
Mm.
So that one is actually based on the Manson family murders, and I didn't know that, but I've also never seen the movie.
Is that the one where they, like, break into your house?
That, yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay.
It's not, like, specifically shot for shot retelling the what they did.
Yeah.
But it's just they took the premise and went with it.
Okay.
Because it's based on, like, some of the actual crimes that you read in the book, Helter Skelter, by the defense attorney, Vincent Bugliosi.
That'd be interesting. I do want to read more, like, true crime novels, but I'm also very scared of those ones, just because those are, I don't know why. Stop looking at me funny.
I read a true crime novel in high school by Truman Capote. It was called In Cold Blood.
It's
about this, like, family who was, like, mysteriously murdered in the middle of their farm, or, like, in their farm in the middle of nowhere. And it was, like, all the evidence they had didn't really point to a specific person or, like, a motive or anything. Mm. So it was, like, truly, like...
Like a mystery.
Yeah.
An unsolved mystery.
I mean, in the book, they, like, also... They, like, it's intercut, like, the story of their murder with who they eventually, I think, ended up arresting for their murder, which is these two guys.
Hmm.
But I didn't finish reading the book, so I don't know if that was true. You know, it was a mandatory book to read, so I didn't give a shit. But yeah, it's not scary. If anything, a little, like, unsettling, but
yeah,
a little boring, too.
Because they're just trying to be factual.
True. Yeah, and they're, I, like, think that's here's also all this.
Here's the,
like,
stuff, wow, that's going on.
Yeah.
Tobe Hooper made the, well...
Hooper.
There's the movie Eaten Alive. He based this horror film on the true story of the alligator killer, Joe Ball. He's a serial murderer from Texas in the
1930s. Ew. But does it say what he did?
Alligators? He ate them?
Oh, it doesn't tell me what he did, but there's a book about him that you can find by T.J. Carlson. It's Joe Ball, Unauthorized and Uncensored.
Mm.
Yes. This one, I watched this movie. I love this movie. It's one of my favorite movies. It does scare me personally.
Uh-huh.
But in a different sense, because I don't think it's... I guess it would scare people in the way that Jaws scares you.
Okay.
Because it is a shark movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Open Water. It is a true story. It is based on the disappearance of Tom and Eileen Lone Gran?
Sure.
So you say they're both dead. They can't say anything. That's mean. I'm sorry if your family members them. I apologize. They're a couple who disappeared during their scuba diving trip off the coast of Australia in 1998, and their bodies were never found.
Oh. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that makes the movie... Very, very tense.
I can't do dark water.
That's also stuff. Why I have a big fear of the open water.
Yeah.
I'm very scared of ever being stranded out in open water.
Me too.
I would never do scuba diving just because I don't like the idea of being very far.
I thought you...
Oh, I'll snorkeling. Do snorkeling. Never mind. Snorkeling's sorry, fine.
Sorry. No, I won't do that either.
Different. I'm on the surface. I can splash. But if I'm on the bottom, that's why I can't do submarines.
Mm-mm.
No.
No, thank you.
The little... Nemo's Adventure thing in Disneyland? No, thanks.
And it smells like diapers.
Although, we did agree that Zodiac is technically not a horror movie. Mm-hmm. Zodiac is obviously based off the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah.
The Vavavitch. The Witch. I'm so used to calling it the Vavavitch. It's based on a true story, technically.
Okay.
All of its dialogues were found in, like, journals and testimonies from the 1700s. And New England colonies.
Oh, I hate that.
All right.
So, like, you can say that, like, oh, that shit's not true or not. Like, it's to your interpretation if any of the stuff is actually real, but you can find stuff in journals.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The early America witchy stuff is
they're
so...
Weird.
obviously, the witch trials were based on just mass hysteria and whatever, but it's still creepy. I saw that movie. I saw the TV show Salem a little bit. I didn't watch all of it because I'm a scaredy cat. But the way that they kind of twisted the Salem witch trials was so eerie and unsettling. I would like to go to Salem, though. I think that would be fun.
I always thought, this is also me being stupid as hell as a child, whenever they said the Salem, like the Salem Witch Trials, mm-hmm. I thought they meant Salem.
The cat?
No. Oh. I thought they meant Alabama? Like, Oregon.
Oregon.
I didn't think they meant
Massachusetts.
And I was just like, I'm Confucian.
Whatever. I strongly believe the Pacific Northwest has its own
weird stuff. Energy.
Yeah, she's got a weird energy on her own.
I know. That's why it was like, I'm confused. but anywho, the next one, I'm skipping a lot of these books, or true stories, but the next one is The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Mm, I remember that. It came out in 2007, the movie.
Mm-hmm. But it's from 1976. It's about a young German girl named Annalise Michelle.
I don't know.
I was like, she's German. I don't know how she would pronounce it. Underwent a series of exorcisms. Mm-hmm. Basically, they did these shit ton of exorcisms because she had six demons in her body.
Like stuffed inside of her?
Stuffed inside this little girl, and she died because of this.
Oh, no.
And then the only reason why, like, her whole thing went public is because they put her family, her two parents, and the priests who did this to court.
Mm. Oh, God.
Because they're like, they put them to trial and they convicted them for negligent homicide.
Mm.
And then, so then they were like, no, we're doing exorcism. She was possessed by the demons, blah, 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 blah.
In Victoria's segment, we're going to touch briefly on exorcism a little more, but I find that so strange. So we'll get to it anyways.
Yeah. there's the movie The Rite.
Yeah,
was
I know that one.
2011. With Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Mm.
He's a creepy man.
He kind of is.
That one directly deals with demons and possessions. It's based on the book, The Rite, The Making of Modern Exorcist by Matt Baglio.
Yeah, that makes sense. Baglio.
Yes. A journalist details the process of training priests to exorcise demons. So it's just kind of like, how do you do it?
Okay.
The
Amity Horror?
Yes, thank you. Every time I try to like tell somebody about that, I'm like, I can't, it never comes out of my mouth.
Anemone.
Yes, that's exactly right. I feel like Nemo. I'm like, I can't do it. So after the violent Defoe family murders, their house stayed vacant for 13 months. This is the part, that part is definitely true. Mm-hmm. You can read about it. There are tons of
stuff. Can't you go visit it? I think it's still there.
Doesn't somebody own it? Does somebody not own it?
I think you can still visit it. I think I've seen pictures. Either I'm confusing it with another haunted house. Yeah, I definitely saw a
picture of it decorated on Twitter. Like, somebody actually decorated it.
Oh,
and they were like,
God,
they were
that.
Like, why do you feel the need to decorate it? if it's all true.
Okay, so there's the real, there's a book that tells you, like, the real, what actually happened.
Okay.
And then there's a book that details the alleged hauntings that the family who moved into the vacant home experienced.
Yeah, okay.
They got a great deal on the house, apparently, but at what cost? So,
I will ask our realtor. Is it haunted? Who died in this house?
True. But sometimes they don't have to disclose it if it hasn't been a certain amount of time.
Within X amount of years.
Yeah. Hell, so.
But if I specifically say, has there been anyone who has died within the last 5 years? Do they have to tell me?
5 years?
I think it's the limit is three.
Oh, I need to know if they've died ever.
Pretty sure, like, it has to, and it's only on certain circumstances.
Okay.
I think it's murder cases where they have to disclose.
Dang it. All right, fine.
Because if somebody just died of, like, natural causes, I don't think they tell you.
I don't. I'm
not a realtor. I'm pulling this out of my ass, but I'm also like, I think that's what logically makes sense.
Okay, fine.
All right, obviously we did talk about The Exorcist, and Victoria will go into why it's a cursed film.
Yeah.
But it is, like Eva said, a true story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 14-year-old boy from Maryland, actually.
Oh, what?
No, it's a boy from Maryland.
Oh, I thought he was from Italy.
You know what? New England is creepy, so I believe it.
I mean, Stephen King was from, Maine? Maryland?
No, he's from Maine.
Maine, yeah.
They did all the Conjuring movie.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah.
Based in Rhode Island, which, by the way, when I went to stay with Desiree, my friend who went to Brown, she was like, oh yeah, it's like 30 minutes from here. Do you want to go visit the house? And I was like, hell no. No.
Hell yes.
She's got a creepy, not my friend, like,
the property,
all that over there. Yeah. On the East Coast.
It's because the East Coast is very old. Because I can even tell you, like, I'm a Floridian, St. Augustine, because it is the oldest town in all of the United States. I don't care what you say, it is of like colonized.
Right.
She feels very particular when you go there, especially if you go to like the old fort.
Nope. Yeah.
And you do the ghost tour.
Hell no.
I've done the ghost tour. It's really, really cool, but you feel the energy. You know there's some shit there.
No, thank you.
But the 14-year-old boy, they never released his name, things like that. He was possessed by 10 demons.
Oh, God.
Okay. Disgusting.
That doesn't sound fun at all. Poor guy. Ugh.
Yeah. He said to have suffered from seizures, violent screaming, body scratches from his body, and other many disturbing things.
Yeah.
Also, this one really freaked me out. Okay. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nuh-uh.
Yes.
No. Wait.
Okay, hold on, though.
Okay.
But it's like, this one... Hold on. I'll say it in a second.
Elaborate.
So, Wes Craven based this on a family who survived the Cambodia killing fields.
Oh. Okay.
So, the family escaped to America. Their youngest boy had a reoccurring nightmares about something chasing him. Because of this, he would try to stay awake for days at a time. When he fell asleep, he screamed throughout the night, but by the time his family came to his aid, he was dead. This terrible incident became the premise of the movie.
Oh.
So, that's what it was. It's not like entirely like the same thing.
But I can see.
But okay. He was like, oh,
inspiration.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah, no. That's why I was like, what the?
Well, yeah, the lack of sleep will do that to you.
Poor guy. I feel like that's like the premise of this whole episode. It's like, oh, poor guy.
Okay, so then I'll go more into The Shining.
Okay.
So in 1974, Stephen King and his wife stayed in the isolated hotel, the Stanley Hotel, which ultimately gave him both an eerie feeling and the idea for his horror novel, The Shining. Once again, if you've ever been to the Stanley Hotel, she's very creepy.
Yeah.
I only ever went into the lobby.
And does it have the carpet?
I heard the carpet's fake. I heard they...
I mean, I think they put it on, right? But did they keep it?
I don't... Because I only ever went into the lobby area and then downstairs to use the bathroom.
First of all, I feel like bathrooms have, like, the creepiest energy of any place you can go in a building.
Their bathroom felt like a diner's bathroom. Like a very fancy diner's bathroom. It was, like, high... It was weird.
There's a Facebook... The group called Bathrooms That Give Threatening Energies. If you guys want to follow it, it's so good.
That bathroom gives you threatening energy. During his stay, he slept in a room with a haunted history and reported seeing figures, hearing unexplained noises, and had some of his belongings stolen and broken. When a hotel janitor, Jack Torrance, is ruled by an evil force called The Shining, he gives his... Yeah.
All right.
That's about the
vibe. Yeah.
Then, obviously, this one, everybody knows the Winchester House.
That's here, right?
Yes.
It's
by, like, San Francisco.
Here in California. Like, sorry, let me elaborate. Yeah.
The Winchester Mystery House is real, and it's Hollywood. Words are hard. Hollywood adaptation is based on a true story. Known as one of the most haunted mansions in the world, the house is 7 stories tall and was once home to Sarah Winchester, heiress of the Winchester Repeating Arms fortune. According to Sarah, the house was haunted by spirits who were killed by the Winchester rifles.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout her life living in the house, it is said that the construction never stops because Sarah wanted to appease the spirits killed by the company's firearms.
I kind of want it. Go.
That's
during one of the like major earthquakes, they like some of the rooms did like break, so break. It's not 7 stories anymore, it's only 4. But there's like over 100 rooms in there.
Yeah, it's
and
wild.
I heard they recently found a new room, like that they had no idea about.
Yeah. So,
I hate that.
With like part, I think they say they made the rooms to, you know, to appease.
It's to confuse,
to hide,
it's to
right?
Confuse,
yeah.
No, well, because they were saying, some people say it's to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, if you go on the tour, they're like, no, it's to house them.
Oh.
Yeah. And then, but it could be either or.
Okay.
Or both.
It could be both. But
I'll hide.
Yeah. So that's some of the horror, big horror movies that are based on true stories. There's a lot out there. It's very scary.
Yeah.
I don't like it that they're based on real things.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Yeah. And then me and Victoria the other day watched the Shudder docuseries called Cursed Films.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria, what are your thoughts?
Well, it was an interesting docu-series. I feel like it started off with, like, actual, what you would call, like, cursed movie sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it was The Exorcist.
The Exorcist was episode one, I believe.
The Omen mm-hmm. and...
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. And then it ended with The Crow and
The Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah. So it, like, started off, like...
Really strong.
Yeah. And then towards the end, it was, like...
Because they have to keep you
invested. Yeah, but the end was weird. Like, it was not...
I wouldn't consider... After what they have showed me, I wouldn't consider The Crow or The Twilight Zone...
Like, cursed film set. Yeah. Because it's, like...
I was
like,
going to say... The Crow is more.
It's accidental.
Don't know what happened.
Yeah.
The lead actor for The Crow,
Brandon Lee.
Brandon Lee, son of Bruce Lee.
His only son, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Was accidentally killed because what they do for, like, guns mm-hmm. is they will, for certain scenes, when it's not close, they will use real bullets. And then when it's close shots, they'll use fake ones.
Yeah, dummy bullets.
Dummy bullets, so they don't hurt you.
Obviously. Yeah, they make the sound and the kind of thing, but they're not going to actually, like, project anything. Mm-hmm. That's how it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person in charge of the props had to leave the mm-hmm. set because mm-hmm. they went into, like, overtime, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they said that.
Yeah.
And then, so the assistant, or, like, a PA, somebody who wasn't in charge of that, got put in charge of it, and they didn't know that they were supposed to take them all out and then re-put in the dummy ones
mm-hmm.
before the scene, so they left in the actual bullets that they used it earlier.
Yeah, it was, like, the little...
It was, like, a...
It was, like, a really small part of a bullet that had been left from a... shot that was, like, from a bullet that was previously shot, so mm-hmm. it was, like, just something was obstructing it.
Yeah.
And they just put, like, a fake bullet in there.
Behind that, yeah.
Yeah, but it had enough force that when the trigger was pulled, it launched that thing, and basically, like, he got shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, point blank.
Yeah.
Shot, and then he died on the way to the hospital or in the hospital?
In the hospital, I believe. I think he died in the hospital, but he was unresponsive at the scene. It's really sad, because that was supposed to be his breakout role. The movie, I don't know, from what they showed us, it looked pretty cool to me.
Yeah. But I mean, you can watch it, because it was mostly done.
He finished most of it.
Yeah, they only used his stunt double. That was also really sad when they were talking about it. Because he died, the makeup artist had to create an actual, like, mask of Brandon Lee's face to put on his body double. And apparently he did such a good job that he, like, totally freaked out the rest of the cast. Because, like, how traumatizing would that be? Was that this guy you've been working with for so long? And he was a very good guy from what I've heard. And then he died so tragically, and then all of a sudden...
Yeah, it's like when Paul Walker died during Fast and Furious.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to get his brother to finish.
Yeah.
And they just, well, now they just digitally do your face.
Yeah.
Because, like, even Billie Lord did it for her mom.
For Star Wars?
Yeah, it's like she's the stand-in for her mom for those scenes. Yeah. And they just digitally put her mom's face on her.
Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the docuseries started off really strong. So,
it did, yeah. So it started with The Exorcist, and it basically just told about all the stuff.
All the horrible stuff that happened.
That went on while the movie was being shot. I've never seen the movie.
I mean,
it's not for me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they started off with, like, the poor little girl.
I forgot. Reagan.
Played by Linda Blair. And she was talking basically about, like, her experience filming it, and it was not good.
No, they, like, almost threw out her back.
Yeah, they pretty much almost snapped her spine in half. You know that scene where
she's
throwing like this on her bed? So apparently the way they were doing it is, like, she had some sort of cord that was supposed to hold her back from going too far up because it was, like, moving her, but it snapped, I think, like, pretty early in the scene. So mm-hmm. so she's, like, really,
like actually,
what you hear of her screaming and what you see, like, the terror in her face is, like, all real.
Yeah.
And then when they were showing, like, the documentary, they show, like, you know, the guy says cut, and then, like, immediately afterwards she's sobbing because it hurts. Like, it hurt her so bad.
She's also a child.
Yeah.
No, it was really... And then, similarly, with the lady who played her mom in the movie...
Yeah.
When they throw her?
Yeah, they rigged her, and
they really did that.
Yeah. And then, what you see on the... Again, you could put this all... For the skeptics out there, you could just put this as the director was just a piece of shit.
And he was.
And he was. Because...
Not saying that he isn't, but...
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of stuff happened.
Is, what's his face? No. His name. Not Exorcist. I was thinking about him.
Yeah, but like, and then also there were just a lot of deaths of the crew.
And then just like some creepy stuff happening. Shenanigans. Yeah.
And then the thing about the docuseries that I kind of appreciated in this first episode, we'll get to the other ones. In this first episode, they were kind of talking about giving you the lowdown of what exorcism is and why, and they're kind of giving you like why this kind of stuff, why making a movie about this stuff would
invite like spirits or, you know, bad energy to the set and stuff. And which, then, you know, it made sense. It didn't seem like anything they were saying was like out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And then the exorcist that they brought on as an expert, I didn't like him at all. I thought that part was like really weird.
They like showed you like actual
exorcisms.
Well, quote unquote exorcisms.
Yeah. So
of
like
people.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, so they were talking about, right, like how real exorcisms are done by like priests and you have to get like trained to do it and all this stuff. But this man, he was like talking about his life, this exorcist, and he was like, oh yeah, I used to, what did he do? He owned a mattress store before. And he was like, but now I became an exorcist and he like learned to do it himself. No. And then they show him like doing an exorcism and then the guy is like paying him afterwards and he's like, so we're good, right? And the guy's like, yeah, you're good. I was like, this is fake.
Yeah. And then from what I've heard from like actual real exorcists, like priests, they're not really like exorcists. That's not their daily job.
Yeah.
A lot of real life exorcists will not take most of the people who come to them. They're just like, where's the proof that you actually like took this person to a psychologist and had them like deeply studied to make sure that this isn't just some mental illness?
Yeah. So like one of the reasons I like the Conjuring movie so much, right, is because they do it really well. And then in the first or second movie, I can't remember which one it is, but they like actually show that. They show, I forgot what the exorcist people's names are, something in Lorraine. But they like, you know, ask, the church asks them for proof of like stuff happening so that they could go perform exorcisms, like in the first movie and I think in the second movie.
Yeah.
So that's true.
Yeah. This exorcist guy did not seem real to me. And I think that goes on into episode 2, where they did not talk about the movie all. Yeah. Because The Omen is about this.
Well, they talked about like the weird things that happened at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But then, so like one of them was that one of the people who worked on the film, him and his girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Or him and his fiance, something like that, were driving and they got into a horrible accident at some place named Omen, but like O-M-M-E-N.
Oh, yeah.
And it just so happened that the marker at where it was also happened to be at 66.6 kilometers, like in the road that they were traveling on.
Isn't that horrible?
That's so fucking weird.
And then that somebody else, like, who had worked on the film in a similar way to one of the deaths on the film, was hit by a... No, he was, like, standing or something, and a truck backed into him, but the truck had planes of glass.
Yeah, and so he
was... he got decapitated.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that happened in the movie. Like, it was a scene in the movie.
Nicole Kidman, how do you sleep at night?
Yeah.
And it was just, like, other odd things like that that just, like, happened to have really specific
just, like, really specific things. Like, someone got electrocuted on the set, and... But that's, like, that's at the beginning of the episode. The rest of the episode, they bring in male witches and black magic guys. And I was like, first of all, you brought me a male witch, so therefore he's not real.
But... Oh, sorry.
No, go.
I was just going to say, but they brought up something interesting, the male witches.
Yeah.
Is that there's, you know, if you, similar to, like, The Exorcist, if you choose to make a movie about this, then you're, like, inviting these, like, weird things into your, like, life, basically.
Yeah.
And then they were saying, you know, somebody else brought up a good point. They were like, you know, are these all coincidences? Are they all real? And he's like, if you are watching a scary movie, or, like, you know, at any point, like, horrors on the mind, then you're gonna associate, I mean, you're gonna notice a lot of bad things, and then you're gonna associate it with like what's going on at the time. So he's like, because all of these bad things happened, and it was like, you know, within the like realm of that movie, like, you know, like all the people who died and whatnot, you're gonna automatically connect it, and then you're gonna want to say like, oh, this is cursed.
Yeah, that's one thing I really liked about how that part of the docuseries presented that they actually brought experts in, like, coincidence.
Yes.
Yeah, an expert in coincidences and, like, math, and he really put it into his perspective that was, like, really, you know, kind of a skeptic's perspective. He was like, of course you're going to think these are cursed because they're horror movies, but, like, what about all the other movies
that he presented it in the form of a box, right? Yeah. It was, like, in one corner you have horror movies that have accidents. Mm-hmm. The other corner is horror movies, no accidents. And then one is regular movies, accidents, and then regular movies, no accidents, right? So he's like, you know, if you're in this mindset already, then you're going to, like, you know,
you're going to find it all.
Yeah. But he's like, but if you think about, like, all the other things, like, you know, you wouldn't say that.
They used city slickers.
Like, you wouldn't say that if something terrible happened on, like, for example, Fast and Furious, because Paul Walker died, you wouldn't say necessarily that...
That movie's cursed.
Yeah, that it's a cursed movie set, because it's not scary, you know?
Like, yeah, because I was going to say, because I was like, he died driving a car, which is what he does.
Exactly.
In the movies. He drove the car very fast.
Yeah.
And that's how he died. But I'm like, I was like, that was just a bad accident. Yeah. I was like, that happens. So I was going to say, because I was like, your docuseries didn't talk about Rosemary's Baby, did it?
No.
Which is weird, because I was like, that would be a cursed movie by their logic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because because I was like, Roman Polanski is the one who was dating, what's her name?
Mia Farrow?
He wasn't dating Mia Farrow.
I thought he married her.
No, it's, what's her name?
Don't look at me. I don't know any actors.
Sharon Tate.
Oh, because his wife that died. I was like, that's right.
Roman Polanski is the husband of Sharon Tate.
That's right.
Who got murdered.
I was
thinking Woody Allen. They briefly
did. No, yeah, they actually briefly did talk about Rosemary's Baby.
Right. Okay, because I was like, standard.
What they said was, it was like the most briefest of moments in the docuseries, but they said the guy who killed...
The coincidence.
Coincidence. He said the guy who killed... John Lennon.
Yep.
So how he jumped to murder John Lennon was he was on this street.
Same street
they filmed
Rosemary's Baby.
He saw the actress...
Mia Farrow.
And then... He also thought Mia Farrow, and then he thought of that actor, and then he thought of the woman who died by the Manson family, and so he was like, therefore, that means...
No, wait.
Huh? No.
The connections were not all there.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry, no, you were close. So it was, right, he saw the building, he saw Mia Farrow, then he went to Roman Polanski, and then Sharon Tate, the Manson family murders, Helter Skelter, which is a song that the Beatles have, something like that.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's on their White Album.
Yeah, and then that he was like, this is a sign, I have to kill him.
So, the jump.
Some people see these smallest things as a sign, but they would also see... that little thing as a cursed film.
True.
I'm like, don't get me wrong, Roman Polanski's a shitty man.
Yeah. But his wife.
Did she deserve that? No. But there's also a theory that I will post it because it's a Vanity Fair article.
Oh okay.
There's a theory that he sacrificed
his wife?
Sharon Tate and his and the baby
pregnant.
For his Hollywood fame. Just like Rosemary's Baby.
I want to see it.
And I'm like, bro.
That's wild. That's crazy.
Because they're like, they all had a downfall. The article was basically saying all of them, because they said Rosemary's Baby is the most cursed film of all time. And they're like,
I believe.
Roman Polanski had a downfall, obviously.
Yeah.
You can also look at everything else that's gone on in his life. He's not allowed to set foot in the United States.
Yeah, because he would get arrested immediately. Child something. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Child something
sexual
is right.
Sexual abuse?
Yeah.
I think it's sexual abuse or sexual assault. One of the
something
two.
Like that, yeah.
Yes, he's not allowed to step foot in the United States. And then...
Mia Farrow?
Mia. I was going to say Maya, and I was like, no! She had a downfall, too. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the relation to...
With Woody Allen? Not to Woody Allen?
I don't know. When I read the article, they only mentioned the John Lennon thing.
Okay.
Her being related to the killing. Indirectly, but direct, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That was like kind of a loose thread.
A little bit.
And I was like, sure, whatever.
Okay.
And then they talked about Levin.
Levin?
L-E-V-I-N.
Yeah, okay. 11, I think.
His downfall. And his downfall is just that he never had any Hollywood success. Mm. Mm-hmm. So they're like, oh, it's just a curse.
So that one's cursed in the way that it ruined everyone's careers.
Yeah, and lives, I was just like, but here's the thing, that Roman Polanski's still making money on you.
Yeah, they don't, nobody cares.
Yeah. Right?
Which is terrible. Oh, I hate you, Hollywood, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then after, and then they kind of bring it back up to when they're talking about Poltergeist.
But that one's weird.
That was an interest. They brought a lot of interesting stuff into that one.
There's theories on Poltergeist that it wasn't directed by the director, it was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
It's his story, though.
I've heard Steven
Spielberg's.
Huh. Well, I mean, the only one of the things that I thought was most interesting to them is they said that one of the reasons it was like a cursed film was because they had real life skeletons, as the skeletons in the pool scene.
Mm-hmm. How dare they? Why would you do
well,
that?
Well, the guy said it was true because it's so much less expensive to go to a place where they sell you skeletons and then just kind of from there mold the skeletons the way you want to, as opposed to paying somebody to like basically carve a whole skeleton for you. So they were like, but the part that really like irked them was that saying that they were from like India because the like person that was, I don't know, doing the narration or somebody that they had talked to was like
prop master or something like
that. They were like, why would you say that? Like you're making out other people, not white people, to still be wreaking havoc after they've passed on.
It was interesting. They took like a racial like take on it. They're just like, it's very racist to think that you would, that we would take Indian. And then also just because it's essentially saying, and it goes on into Poltergeist 2, where again, it's buried on Indian burial, like Native American burial grounds, saying, kind of villainizing people of color, non-white people as villains, even after they're dead.
Yeah.
And yeah, the prop master was just like, that's just absurd. He was like, why would we, first of all, why would we do that? Second of all, it's so cheap just to get our own from any.
From right here.
So. From literally on American soil from respectable resources.
Yeah, but that story was sad because it was, there are the two deaths of the from daughters. The main cast. Yeah. The first, the older one, I don't know what her name is.
The sister.
I remember her name was Dominique, like in real life, but I don't remember her last name. But yeah, she was killed by her ex-boyfriend. He strangled her after the first movie. And then the little girl died of a undiagnosed
disease.
She had
obstruction in her intestines or something.
Yeah, there was like an abscess, I think, in her intestines.
That she was like born with.
Yeah, and then they didn't catch it, and she was being treated
for something else.
Yeah, and then essentially it just kept on blocking a lot of stuff in her intestine, and then it burst, and then that's how she died. It's really sad, and she obviously didn't get to finish the movie.
Yeah,
and the whole time the director, he was talking about it, and
they got the director from Poltergeist 3.
Because I was like, she dies in the third one.
Yeah, and he talked about it, and he seemed genuinely very upset to talk about the whole thing because he loved this little girl, and he was willing to like not finish the movie. Everyone was like, whatever, we're not gonna finish it, but the company was just like, we put so much money into this, you're going to finish it. And so they made a body double, this girl, and they dressed her up.
Oh my god.
And they couldn't show her face, so for the last part of the movie, so
it's just like her body, but not.
Yeah.
Like they show her from the back.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. And so this poor people, they just had to deal with that. And then at the end of the credits, the company also wanted to make a, you know, in memoriam to this little girl, but the director was like, no. He was like, what?
Other way around. The director was about it.
Oh,
the company didn't care. Oh. Yeah, remember, the director was talking about how much he loved the little girl.
But I thought he didn't want to do it because I thought that he thought it was bad that they even finished it without her.
I think maybe that part might be right. But they had the tiniest little
memorial thingy at the end.
Yeah, but, and then, like, a lot of just weird stuff like that happened. But then a lot of the people that they talked to who were connected to these movies were like, it is not a cursed movie set. Mm-hmm. It is, like, disrespectful to say that because these people died of, like, actual things that could have been prevented.
Yeah.
They're like, so to connect it to to these movies that they did is like so disrespectful. Because
I was like, the little girl was diagnosed with that from birth. So yeah. Like, it'd be, I guess it'd be different if she developed that when she got casted in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm like, bro, that's not.
Yeah, she was born with that shit.
Yeah, I was like, that's not.
Yeah, they're really protective of that.
Cursed movies are always very, unless it's like actual like spooky things that are happening, rather than like mistakes that are happening.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's why like the deaths one always like.
Yeah, it never comes as a result of like being in the movie. Well, mostly unless somebody is.
The Omen ones are kind of freaky.
The Omen ones
are kind of freaky.
We heard it. We were like,
that one. I kind of like.
But that one with the poltergeist one is really sad.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And then it just gets sadder and sadder.
Yeah, the crow, like we were talking about earlier, is because of a mistake. Like, there was nothing else on that film set, really, that would be like, this is a cursed film set. Yeah. I think they said one person got
electrocuted. Sorry, I'm mixing up my movies. But that's about it.
Yeah.
He lived, didn't he? That person lived?
Oh, yeah. He was like, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say he was fine, but he did live. Yeah. And then the last episode.
That
was not.
I don't think that's a cursed film set. I think it was
the ego.
It was negligent directing. It was negligent movie making. Really.
So it's the Twilight Zone, the movie. Mm-hmm. So the premise of the movie is like this man who's like supposed to be prejudiced, like a bigot, right?
Yeah, he's supposed to be like a bigot. Yeah.
He goes through, I think it's like 3 or 4 different eras in time in which he's being hunted. I guess like the prejudice. It's like flipped. Like. Okay. The prejudice is now on him.
Like, he looks like his regular white self, but it's like all these, you know, all these people, these oppressors are oppressing him, and so he gets to experience all the bullshit that he puts on other people, essentially.
And then I guess, like, at the end, he's supposed to have, like,
that's a great premise, though.
A change of heart. Steven Spielberg was one of the people that produced it, but not like
he
the
didn't
director.
Have anything.
What was the guy's name? The fucking guy. John Landis,
yeah.
Okay, so it's
the
like
anger that she had.
It is
now.
So infuriating. Upsetting. So like everything is fine, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like filming wise, up to that point, and then they go for the final section because it's like kind of like an anthology.
Yeah.
Okay.
In that like. Each thing is its own.
Yeah.
Like, but, and it's about a Vietnamese village, right?
Yeah.
Like
so
in the Vietnam War.
The main character is supposed to be in the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And essentially, he is supposed to be saving these two. This is kind of where the turn of his character, essentially, is what this whole scene is. And he's supposed to be saving these two Vietnamese children from American soldiers.
Yeah, because it's in the point of view of the movie, like, he's a Vietnam soldier.
Yeah.
So, like, he tries to go to the American people for help, and they start shooting him.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, never mind. So he's trying to rescue these kids, right? And the way it's supposed to work is that he runs out of this village that somebody built.
Yeah.
And he runs across a lake. Across the lake, bombs are going off and there's a helicopter who's supposed to be, like, flying in to shoot at them, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's supposed to be, like, you know, triumphant. He crosses a lake with the two kids. Done. Right?
Yeah.
So the director is like, first of all, he does not give two shits about child labor laws.
Yeah.
So they're supposed to be, he wants to film like in the middle of the night. He's like, I want it to be as realistic as possible.
Yeah. Like shoot at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, no kids are allowed to work that late. So what are you going to do? And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to grab them off the street. So he finds two kids off of the street. And then I think they just like offer them money, right? To like come work basically.
Yeah, he gets the parents' permission.
This is when you just get
those. Yeah.
It just, yeah.
They're like 6 and 7, I think.
Yeah, they're
really
very young.
Small kids. And then
also, you know, like Asian American kids.
Mm-hmm. So. And then he is starting to set up all of the like action sequences, but especially like the last one, right? And so they're putting like a bunch of bombs and they're trying to, not bombs, like explosives.
Yeah.
And they're trying to set it up so that they can, you know, run through unharmed. So they're like, you know, doing those tests and stuff, but they have to do it at the same time as there's like a helicopter coming in because the helicopter is like important to their scene.
Okay.
So they're doing it all at once and they're trying to control the environment to make it like safe.
Yeah.
And so then they try it once with like the explosives of a certain caliber.
Yeah.
Like it's like smaller.
Yeah.
But it's already, like, fucking with the helicopter. And so they're like, okay, we can't do this, like, or we have to be, like, really, really careful. And the director is like, okay, well, this isn't even the size of the explosives that I want. Like, so we're going to make it work. So
sounds like Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was...
But Michael Bay is at least safer, I think.
Right, yeah.
And so it's funny because in the episode, they like juxtaposed his story with the story of this like dude who is the director of like a really strange small movie.
I don't know. Company.
And he's like all about safety.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was like a strange part to insert.
They didn't have to include that.
Anyway. So when it comes for like the day of shooting, the day they're going to do it, essentially like everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. So the size of the explosives that the director wants to use is like just dangerously too much.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like one of the things that I hated the most. They like actually showed you what happened. Like they showed you the footage and you watch, like you see them die, but you don't see them die.
Yeah.
Up close.
Yeah.
You don't see
the violence of it, but you get the idea. It,
yeah.
It's,
and it left us feeling like just no, really
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, like essentially is this man with these two kids in his arms and he's wading through this wild, rough water because there's explosives and the wind from the helicopter above him. And you can see like as he's going struggling. Through, he's, oh my God, I can't imagine how much he's like probably freaking out. And the poor kids are like, what's going on? And also the parents of the children are off to side with the director on set watching this. And they're just like, are they going to be okay? And then the director's like, they're fine.
If I was a parent, I would have called cut.
And
screw it.
And then...
Even if they had called cut, though, like, it was already...
Yeah, I know.
And then the explosives fucked with the helicopter flight, and the helicopter comes down.
And the worst part is that it doesn't even, like, crash into them. Like, it hits them propeller first.
Yeah, the blade.
And they, like...
It was really not fun to see. I was really upset like that they shook. Showed it.
They showed it multiple times.
I know. I was like, I don't want to see this.
See, that to me is a tragic death.
Yeah.
That is a tragic, like, film death.
Yeah.
But it's like, not a curse.
Yeah, I was like, it's not a curse. Like, that's just a genuine, like, an accident. Obviously, a preventable accident.
Yeah.
Because, like, that is 100% the director's fault for being a dick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an accident.
Yeah.
Like, there are accidents that happen on film sets all the time.
Hmm.
There have been deaths that happen on film sets.
Yeah, they brought in, they brought in the stunt actor who played Jason and a whole bunch of your usual horror monsters.
Yeah.
And he's, like, a seasoned stunt guy. I thought this was actually quite interesting, where he was talking about how him as a stunt person puts his life at risk every time he works. That's part of the job.
Mm.
And what I didn't truly like is when they were talking about the repercussions of this, obviously the director and the company as itself were charged with, the director was charged with second degree murder.
Uh-huh.
And long story short, he's found not guilty, essentially because they were just like, it's just a part of the job.
Yeah, they were like, it was an accident that you... What did they say? Accident due to unforeseeable circumstances? And I'm like...
I was like, I foresaw it. and even the people were not charged. They weren't even charged for illegally hiring these children.
Yeah.
Which is... I was like, you can at least charge them for illegally hiring these children. I personally think they didn't give two shits because they were not white. That's just me.
Yeah.
There and so I just think the entire that one should not have been in this docuseries.
Yeah. That was probably the crow either.
No.
I think they had a good thing going with the first three.
Yeah.
And then...
They probably ran out of movies.
Maybe.
They could have done an episode on the Rosemary's Baby. There's a lot of conspiracies with
that and
one.
You can talk all about, you know, the Manson stuff and everything like that. And, like, maybe you could talk about mental illness and how some people, you know, jump to conclusions. And it's just...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It ended on a pretty bleak note. Yeah. Afterwards, we watched Hercules because we were, like, so sad.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, that's what curse film sets.
Yeah.
There's
I mean, I'm sure if you did some Googling, you could find some other ones that have stronger cases as a cursed film set as opposed to these other two ones that they showed us at the end. But like I said, I mean, if you want to watch the first three episodes, I think they're good. The last two.
Yeah, because I'm like,
it's fine.
When it's like real, because they're like we did the list, there are real scary shit that happened in the world or like in the United States, even. Like,
and,
come on, people.
Yeah.
So screw that.
Yeah, that's that.
Twilight Zone, that, God, that makes me angry.
Yeah, no, it was really infuriating. I was upset afterwards, but. Mm.
Sorry we gave you guys that.
How do we make it happy after this?
What are we talking about? Next week.
Yeah, okay, next week. Pretty much next week, we're just going to be talking about our favorites.
Yep, all of our favorites. We're going to talk about the ones we didn't talk about before.
Yeah.
We'll probably brush up on just, like, our favorite Halloween, spooky,
cause
anything.
Because we're going to try to release it the day before Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll just kind of fangirl about anything that we love to watch and to consume during the spooky season.
The must-sees.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we'll give you a little teaser. Like, you know, Hocus Pocus is a must-see.
I watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
Halloween Town.
Yep.
Halloween Town 2.
I was going to say, we can talk about, we'll probably talk about all the Disney Channel ones.
Yeah.
They're very influential to all of us.
True.
Phantom of the Megaplex, let's go!
Oh my god, Don't Look Under the Bed. That's not my favorite, but it did scar me for life.
Twilight Zone, Tower of Terror.
So good. We're just gonna talk about all the spooky things. Maybe we'll talk about Disneyland and the Oogie Boogie Fest, which I thought was a lot of fun.
We're gonna talk about Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My miss holy grail. I do miss her. So I almost went to Florida, but I'm trying to stay safe.
Yeah.
Are they having coronavirus.
They only had two houses. It's the Revenge of the Tooth Fairy and what's the other house? It's Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay. Oh, that could be fun. You know what? Their classic movie ones always go hard.
Yeah, those I was ones gonna are say, scary. They typically know how to do those very well.
Yeah, so if you guys want a fangirl with us,
check out next week's episode.
Yes.
All right. We're going to give a shout out to a small business, how we have been all week. All month. Jesus.
Time is an illusion.
Time is not real. So the story is called Sarah's Grotto. She does, basically she experimented with resin in the middle of the pandemic. And she was like, you know what? I got laid off by Disney. Because she's a former cast member now. She's one of the 20, unfortunately, one of the 28,000. Thanks, Trump.
Yeah.
Her shop has different kinds of jewelry, keychains, and home decor. She has these really cute, like, Ouija board, like, hanging things. I don't know how to, like...
Like a mobile? Those chimes? Is it a chime?
But it's not a chime. You just, like, it's like...
It hangs.
Yeah, it just hangs on
a mobile.
It's just, sure.
Right? Like a baby mobile.
No, but
not for
babies.
Oh, just like a decor.
It's a decor thing. It's a wall decor. I was like, not a mobile. You don't put it above a baby's thing. It's a present. They're super, super cute.
I love her, like, little resin, like, flower dagger earrings. I think those are so cute.
Yes. She's got tons of keychains and things like that. And then she's, as we leave Halloween and enter the winter season into Christmas, she's also going to be doing a lot of Christmas stuff, too.
Love that.
So go ahead and check out her store. It's called Sarah's Grotto. She has a Twitter. Also, it's Sarah's Grotto. You can look it up. We'll put the link to her store and Twitter account in our show notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, again, be...
Yeah, again, what?
Yeah, like, just, you know, be safe. And we are a couple weeks away from the election.
Please vote.
Literally,
like, 3 weeks.
Please vote. It's very easy. It's very simple.
Early voting has started in some states.
Yeah.
No, Florida started this today.
Yeah. And again, make a day out of it. If you have to go, you know, in person, make sure you bring a chair.
A mask.
Make something to pass the time.
An umbrella if you're out in
the sun. Exactly. An umbrella. You know, make sure you're prepared. And also, you know, take your time. Actually research the people you're voting for. In one state, a trans Satanist woman. She ran for a Republican sheriff in this one state, and she won because no one was paying attention, and then everyone got really upset that a trans Satanist was their Republican representative for sheriff.
Queen.
Good for her. Smart. Good for her, but, you know, if you guys don't want that, do your research. Yeah, just be nice. Times are hard.
It's 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's the election.
Oh, 2 weeks. Oh, tomorrow. I gave you an extra week. Oh, don't listen to me.
Okay, yeah. Just go, go, go.
I'm Emily. You can find me on Twitter at the Emily Garon. Our collective Twitter and Instagram is at Pop and Stance. Mm-hmm. Give us a follow.
I'm Eva. You can find me on Instagram at Bevamart. And then on Twitter, you can find me Eva_Bevamart. I post a lot of art because that's what I do.
And I'm Victoria. You can find me at Chubby Pink Kirby.
Love it so much. It's so good.
On Twitter. And yeah, my Instagram is private, but only because I don't want people from high school knowing what I do now.
As it should be. Yeah, no. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah. And then I'm excited for next week.
Yeah.
Let's finish the month off strong. Bye, guys.
Stay safe.
Bye.